Let's come back to barrier methods. Okay. As I described you, a barrier method is a technique of penalization which are based on the idea that we should generate a sequence of points which are feasible, and at the same time exploiting unconstrained minimization. So the idea is to build a barrier near to the border of the feasible region in such a way that the minimum point of the new objective function, the original plus the barrier, is inside the feasible region. Okay? And we have seen it last time, we have made a couple of exams, and we proved that, we stated that if we generate a sequence of optimal solution for the unconstrained barrier problem with a decreasing sequence of coefficients for the barrier term, the solution, the cluster points of this sequence are solution of the original problem. Okay, so I will review it now in a moment. Let's say through an example. Okay, so we review this topic through a very good example. We wish to minimize this function of two variables, which is nothing but 1/2 times the square of the norm, over this very simple feasible region, x1 is greater or equal than 2. Okay? So, let's apply the barrier technique. And let's use the logarithmic barrier. From now onwards, we will always use the logarithmic barrier. I will refer to the example. So, we add to the objective function this barrier times epsilon, which is the penalization term, and the barrier is minus the sum all over all of the constraints of the logarithm of minus the constraining function. Okay? So here minus the logarithm of x1 minus. And we wish to minimize this over this open region, x1 greater than 2. Okay. And notice here, this quantity is called positive, so the logarithm is well defined. Otherwise, it would be the logarithm of a negative number. Okay? But this is, as we discussed, somehow an unconstrained optimization problem because the feasible region is an open set. So minimum point over this region must vanish the gradient. The gradient of minimum point must be zero. So here we can compute the gradient of this function. The gradient of this function is, so let's call this Q. Epsilon x, the gradient of this function is, so let's take the gradient of this is x1, x2. Okay? Now we have to take the gradient of the logarithm. The gradient of the logarithm is 1 over the argument. Okay? And the argument depends only, so 1 over the argument, which is x1 minus x2 times the gradient of the argument, and the gradient of the argument is the vector 1 0. derivative with respect to x1 is 1, and with respect to x2 is 0, because x2 is not there. So here the gradient is actually x1 minus epsilon over x1 minus 2 and x2. Okay? At which point does this gradient vanish? So, well, it's pretty. This has to be 0, so this requires x2 to be 0. Okay. And also x1 equal epsilon divided by x1 minus x2, so I can multiply both for this, and so this is the other equation is actually x1 squared minus 2x1 minus epsilon equals 0. Okay? This one is this, and this one turns out to be this. Okay? And if you solve the second order equation, what you get is 1 plus or minus 1, the square root of 1 plus epsilon. Okay? Notice that this has to be greater than 2. Okay? So, this solution does not work. Okay? Because it's less than 1. So we are left only with the other one. Okay? Which is greater than 2, because it is 1 plus the square root of something which is greater than 1, and so the square root is greater than 1. Okay? So this is greater than, this is always greater than 2. So when you solve this problem, what you get is this solution. Let me call f of epsilon, and it is so 1 plus the square root of 1 plus epsilon and 0, okay? Which goes, as epsilon goes down to 0, to 0. Okay? Which is obviously the solution of this problem, of our original problem, because x2 is not constrained, so this quantity is minimized if you take x2 equals 0. Okay? X2 is free. And this is minimized when you take the minimum value, the minimum possible value for x1. So it's obvious that this gets the minimum for 2, 0. Okay? This is free, so the best value is 2, 0. Here you have to take the smallest value you can, and so it's 2. Okay? And we already knew this. Okay? Now, let's check also KKT conditions. Okay? Let's compute the KKT condition for the original problem. The KKT condition for the original problem are this solution to 0. Read what? Okay, we have to take the gradient of the object, so KKT is the gradient of the objective function plus the sum over all constraints of lambda I gradient of GI in the current point equals 0, and then implementary is left. Okay, this in general. We have a unique constraint, so we have a unique multiplier. So the gradient of the objective function is this. Okay. So computed at 2,0, the gradient is 2,0. Then plus lambda 1, let's say, and then we have to take the gradient of the constraint in function. Okay, 2 minus x1. If you make the derivative with respect to x1, you take minus, you get minus 1. If you take the derivative with respect to x2, you get 0. Okay? So, the gradient of f is x1, x2. In our point, it becomes 2,0. Okay? G1 is 2 minus x1. It's a linear function. When you take the gradient, you get minus 1, 0. Okay? So, this is the Lagrange multiplier's rule. And also we have complementarity slackness, so lambda 1 times 2 minus x1 has to be 0. Okay? And then also, well, we did not discuss it, we have also had feasibility. x1 has to be greater or equal than 2, and lambda 1 has to be greater or equal than 0. So multipliers have to be greater or equal than 0, and constraints must be satisfied. I mean, this is very easy to solve. Because it says what? First equation says that 2 minus lambda 1 has to be 0. So, here we get that lambda 1 has to be equal to 2. Okay? 2 plus lambda 1 minus 1 equals 0. The second is 0 plus 0 equals 0. Doesn't mind. So now we have that lambda 1 is 2, so this is not 0. So this has to be 0, so x1 has to be equal to 2. Oh, well, actually we already knew at the moment that we chose 2,0, okay? As we chose 2,0 here, we knew that this had to be 1,2, otherwise it would have been inconsistent. Okay? So we got that 2 is the corresponding multiplier. Okay? So 2,0 is the unique optimal solution of the problem, and lambda 1 equal 2 is the unique multiplier. Okay? So this is the information about this this example we have at the moment. Actually, you could also write KKT condition in general for any point. Okay, you will find out that the only point satisfying the KKT condition is x bar, and lambda 1 equal 2 is the unique corresponding multipliers. Okay, I've done already at the given point, but you could have done putting here x1 and x2. Okay. So, indeed, it's the unique solution. The problem is a convex problem, so KKT conditions are also sufficient, so this works. And the multiplier is 2. I'm coming back to this because, indeed, in general, there is a strong connection between this kind of penalization with the logarithmic barrier and KKT conditions. So in general, we have our problem T and we add the barrier, the logarithmic barrier, in this way. So minus epsilon, the sum over I from 1, 2, n of the logarithm of minus gi. And this is defined where gi are rho omega. Okay? Now, once again, let's call this objective function q epsilon at x. Okay? So since this is a open set, a minimum point, so let's say that epsilon is a minimum point of this. Okay? What you know is that since it is a minimum point, let's say also local, let's remind it is that what you get is that the gradient on this object is something at this point has to be zero, the zero vector. Okay? I'm saying nothing different from the example. Well, but now let's compute this gradient. So the function is f minus something. So the first part, the gradient is the gradient of x. Okay? Then you have epsilon, and then you have this logarithmic function. So we must take the derivative of that. So the derivative of the gradient of that. So the derivative of the logarithm is 1 over the argument. Okay? And then you have to take the derivative, the gradient of the argument. And the argument is g with a minus, so this becomes a plus. Sorry, g at the given point. So computing the derivative, I get this formula. Computing the gradient, sorry, I get this formula. Oh. What? But this? I'm forgetting the thing. Okay. Well, notice this. This is Lagrange multiplier's rule. Okay. Because you can put this here. It multiplies all the terms of the sum, and this is Lagrange multiplier's rule for x epsilon with these multipliers. Okay? So indeed, if you are doing the logarithmic barrier technique, you are achieving a point which satisfies the Lagrange multiplier's rules together with these multipliers. Let's go back to the example and check the multipliers for these problems. This problem here, okay? We know that the approximate solution is 1 plus the square root of 1 plus epsilon 0. Okay? The multiplier would be epsilon would be, sorry, there's a minus. Minus epsilon divided, what is the value of the constraint function at this point? Well, the constraint function is this one, so it is 2 minus this. Okay? This is the first component. 2 minus this, so it's 2 minus 1, which means 1, minus 1 plus epsilon, and you take the square root of it. Okay? Or take away the minus, you get epsilon divided one, the square root of 1 plus epsilon minus 1. Okay? This is this multiplier. Now, take the limit as epsilon going down to 0. This is 0 over 0, because this goes to 1 minus 1. Okay? But you can apply, this is power 1 and this is power 1 half. Okay? You can apply, for instance, Hopital rule, and you will find that this goes to 2. Okay? Because you have to take the derivative, you have to make the limit of the derivative of the numerator over the limit of, over the denominator. Okay, so here you have 1, and here you have a square root which takes 2 times the square root above, so it goes to 2. Okay? I mean, it's a calculus exercise, you can do it. But the relevant thing is the following. This limit is exactly the multiplier corresponding to the optimal solution. Okay? X epsilon is going to the optimal solution, and this corresponding multiplier is going to the true multiplier of the original problem. Okay? So, this provides a technique to compute also the corresponding multipliers. Okay? This is, I've shown you on the example, this is true in general under some mild assumptions, okay? Some assumption on the limit point of this sequence, a few, let's say, constraint qualification and something little more. I'm not interested in giving you the details. So, under those assumptions, you can prove that this goes to a vector. This goes to multipliers of corresponding to the limit point. Okay. So one should solve this type of constraint optimization problem applying barrier methods with the logarithmic barrier, for instance, and you get this type of result. But so you should solve for a sequence of parameters going to 0. Okay, but when to stop? Okay, in principle you should take the limit as the parameter goes to 0. Okay, but indeed there is a nice result which you find apart only on my lecture notes. So it's a prize for those of you who came up to the last lecture. So since it's not on the lecture note, if you are asked the exam, how do I stop this type of method, you have the answer. You can have the answer. Well, if you have a look at my lecture note, you will find that this type of result, if the objective function and constraint functions are convex, and the set of minima of the original problem is a compact set, then this sequence has at least one cluster point, and the indeed, so if you take let's say Xk to be X of epsilon k for some sequence, and indeed the full sequence of values goes to the optimal value. Okay. When you have a cluster point, you know this property for the subsequence which converge to the cluster point. But this is true in general. Okay. For the full sequence. Okay. You find this result in a circle. So if F and GIs are convex, then you have this additional property. The full sequence of values of the optimal solution of the barrier problem go to the optimal value without taking subsequence. But there is something more, okay, which can be proved very very easily. And I'm going to show you. And it is the following. Actually, we do know a bound for this. Okay, we know that X epsilon is a feasible solution. Okay, so let's call the optimal value F star. Okay, since it's a feasible solution, this value is greater or equal than the optimal value. Okay, but, and this is very nice, we know that this is also less or equal than the optimal value plus n times epsilon, where n is the number of constraints. Okay. But you need that the problem is a convex problem, so F and GI are convex. And I can give you the proof of this result, because it's simple, and very nice. So, you know that this rule is satisfied, okay? So, you know that okay, consider the multiplier fixed, okay? Consider this just as a function of x. Okay, where these are given. Okay. So this is nothing but the gradient. This is the gradient of that function. Okay? And the gradient of that function is zero at x epsilon. Okay? And the function is convex. This function is convex because this is convex. These are convex and these are non-negative numbers. Okay? I did not stress it here, but epsilon is positive. X epsilon is feasible, so this is negative with minus is positive. So these are positive numbers. So this function is convex, and its gradient is zero at x epsilon. It means that this function is minimized at x epsilon over a Rn, okay. But since it's feasible, we could say also over the feasible region. let's call it, we call it F, capital F, the set of points at which gi of x is less or equal to 0 for all i's. Okay? But now, we know somehow that f of x plus if x is feasible, okay, this is greater or equal than 0. This is less or equal than 0, so this is greater or equal than 0. So all of this is less or is it correct? Yeah, positive, negative, so this is negative, I'm sorry. Okay? Positive coefficient and the value is less or equal than 0. So this quantity is less or equal than 0. Okay? So you sum negative quantity, so this is less or equal than f. Okay? Then you take the minimum over the feasible region. If the function is less or equal at every point, also the minimum value is less or equal than the minimum value. This is our optimal value. Okay? This is a different way to write p. And this is nothing but f at x epsilon plus because x epsilon is the minimum point. Okay? Well, we're almost done because which value is this? This value is exactly this. So you can substitute. GIX can be simplified. So you're left with minus epsilon. Okay? This quantity is exactly minus epsilon. Okay. By the way, these coefficients are defined. You multiply by gi, so it's simplified. So you are summing minus epsilon m times. So this is m times epsilon max. Okay. So this quantity is less or equal than this, which is stated here in other terms. Okay. So this is a very nice property because you know how precise, you can know how close you are to the optimal value. Okay? It depends on how many constraints you have and the choice of your penalization parameter. Okay? Clearly, as epsilon goes to 0, this goes to the optimal value. Which is the result I stated you earlier. If you take the sequence of values at xk, that goes to the optimal value without taking the subsequence converging to the cluster point, because you have this problem. This is very nice. So you can use this as a stopping criterion for the algorithm. Okay? Or you could also choose directly the appropriate epsilon. Okay? There's one last thing which is relevant in this topic, and it is this. Okay, let's go back here. We have Lagrange multipliers rules. Okay. What about the other KKT conditions? Okay. Well, let's see. Lambda i's are positive. So feasibility of multipliers is guaranteed. Okay, they are positive. X epsilon is feasible because
it is the leader of the feasible region, solves this problem. Okay.
So what we are doing? What about complementarity flattens? Okay.
The only thing we are left to check is
are the complementarity flattens condition. Okay. So let's check that.
And we already did it. We already did it here.
Okay. This quantity, if you substitute,
is minus x.
So, complementarity slackness is not satisfied unless epsilon is zero. But if epsilon is zero, you are not doing any penalization. Okay? Please,
let me write this in this way with a positive epsilon and take the minus here.
Okay? So we have everything good in for KKT condition except that here we have epsilon instead of zero. Okay? This is an approximation of KKT conditions. Okay? We don't require complementarity exactly. We require an approximation of complementarity. Okay? And indeed,
let me write the problem this way, adding one auxiliary variable for each inequality constraint. Okay, I will write this as equalities, adding a variable si which is greater or equal than zero. So stating this is exactly equivalent to stating the problem in that way. Okay? But this will be nice because xi, the value of xi is minus gi at x. So is this. Okay? So the approximate KKT conditions are the following. The Lagrange multiplier school, as usual. Let's say feasibility. So these have to be zero. Feasibility for GIs, and then we must know that lambda I has to be greater or equal than zero, and Si has to be greater or equal than zero. And then we can write complementarity slackness as lambda I, Si equal X. What's the reason for adding the auxiliary variables Si? Equalities. Okay? This is a system of equalities. So here how many we have? We have n, because the gradients are... Oh, sorry, here we have the gradient. The gradient is an n-dimensional vector. Here we have m, okay, and here we have m, okay. And which are the variables? Well, the variables are x, which is a vector in Rn, so n variable, si, we have
and Si for each constraint, so they are M. And then we have the multipliers. The multipliers are 1 for each constraint, so once again M. So we have M plus M plus M equation with M plus M plus M variables. Okay. So what we have a nice system of, let's say, k equation with k variables. What could we use to solve it? Newton-Raphson method, for instance. Okay, here you don't have zero, but if you put minus, and this will be zero, okay? And this is a given value. So we could use Newton-Raphson method, but there is something I'm forgetting. Well, lambda I's and S I's have to be greater or equal than zero. This is not true in general. So let's suppose I solve this by Newton-Raphson method, maybe I find solution with negative components for these two vectors, for some negative multipliers or some negative auxiliary variable. Okay. So all of this gives rise to an entire family of methods which are called primal dual interior point methods. Primal, it means, is for our problem, for the axis. Dual for the multipliers. Okay? We have seen in linear programming that the Lagrange multipliers are the variables of the dual problem. Okay? And what's the idea of these methods? Try to solve this system as the penalization parameter or the approximation parameter goes to zero in such a way that at each iteration the multipliers and the auxiliary variables remain positive. Okay? So you take you start from a point at which these are positive. Okay. Then you apply Newton-Raphson method. You move along Newton's direction, but not of unitary step as in Newton-Raphson method, but with a step which is small enough to preserve the positivity of these multipliers and auxiliary variables. Okay. It may happen that if you take a full Newton step, okay, some of these components get negative. But if you start for a point at which all of them are positive, not zero, positive, okay, and you move along that direction of a small enough step, you preserve the fact that these vectors are non-negative. Okay. I think we can take very short break because we are a bit late, and then I'll show you how this works for linear programming. Okay? In case in which the problem is a linear programming.